Chapter 2. Serrated Sun. Devastation. Aurelian. Cyrene's reckoning took 2 months to arrive. Almost 9 weeks of lancing headlong through the tides of unspace, breaking through the immaterium with little thought of safety or control. They lost vessels, they lost lives, but they lost no time. Reality trembled in their wake. The first ship to burst from the immaterium ripped back into reality on tormented engines. As it accelerated from the wound of re-entry, it seemed cast from the warp like a grey spear trailing plasma mist the colour of madness. Its engines roared heavy and hot into the silence of space. Along its ridged spine, statues of marble and gold stared out into the starry void. Armoured buildings of worship rose like overlaid carbuncles from the vessel's skin. Battlements lined the walls of those cathedrals, and dozens of lesser temples were decorated with banks of weapon turrets in their tallest towers. The vessel, terrible in size and grim in aspect, was more a bastion city of prayer and warfare than a space-borne vessel. Its dangerous momentum sent shudders through its metal bones, and still it didn't slow down. Blue-white engine wash streamed in disintegrating smoke trails from immense boosters that had taken decades to construct by thousands of labourers working millions of hours. The ship's prow was fashioned into a colossal ram, an eagle figurehead wrought in dense metals polished to a silver sheen. In its talons, the eagle held the steel-forged icon of an open book. The beast's head was frozen open in a silent shriek, its cold eyes reflected the stars. Other ships arrived, rending reality, breaking from the warp as lesser blurs of grey, a volley of arrows that eclipsed the stars around them. A few at first, then a dozen, soon a fleet, at last an armada. 116 ships, one of the greatest coalitions of force the human race had ever assembled. And still more arrived, savaging the layer between realms, dropping from the immaterium, attempting to race alongside their glorious flagship. The grey armada moved in loose formation, the slower vessels falling behind, as over 100 ships closed in on a single blue-green world. A world already surrounded by another battle fleet. One of the armada's vessels, a ship mighty enough in its own right but utterly dwarfed by the flagship at the fleet's vanguard, was the battle barge De Profundis. In Low Gothic, its name translated with ragged eloquence into Out of the Depths. In the Colchisian dialect of the warship's homeworld, it translated from those proto-Gothic roots as From Despair. The terminal shuddering through the ship's bones lessened with real space reasserting its hold, and temporal engines took over from the overheated warp thrusters. The captain of De Profundis rose from his ornate command throne as his ship threw off the Imperium's lingering shackles. The throne itself was carved ivory and black steel, draped with devotional parchment scrolls and taking up the centre of a raised dais. On the tiered steps leading up to his throne stood three other figures, each clad in the same granite-grey battle armour, each one with their gazes cast at the display oculus taking up the entire forward wall. The scene unfolding on the visual screen was one of unrivaled chaos. Order was breaking down before the fleet even engaged the enemy, as if the anger of every captain bled freely into the trajectories of their vessels, breeding irrationality where focus was needed. The chapter master's armour thrummed with energy, its exposed cabling connected to the back-mounted power pack. Ornate beyond many other suits of Astartes warplate, the personal armour of Chapter Master Dumos was unashamedly brazen in its declaration of his accomplishments. Detailed in engravings etched into his pauldrons was a recording written in Colchisian cuneiform, the runic script listing his victories and kill counts in poetic verse. Emblazoned on his left shoulder guard and overlaying the runic poetry was an open book sculpted from bronze, with its pages aflame. Each tongue of fire was hand-carved from red iron, welded with artful craft onto the book itself. In the right light, the metal pages seemed to flicker with iron flame. Lastly, ringing one of the slanted red eye lenses of his snarling helm was a stylized spiked star of brass. It was a symbol repeated across the hull and spinal buildings of the De Profundis, heralding the battle barge as the vessel of the chapter of the Serrated Sun. Each ship in the fleet bore its own unique sigils. The Osseous Throne, the Crescent Moon, the Coiled Lash, symbol upon symbol, a stream of signifiers. Here in the void, they were scattered like the hieroglyphs of a shaman's runestones. The eyes of every warrior, officer, serf, and slave were fixed upon the planet of Kur, and the capital city that had once been visible from space. In a sense, it still was, an ashen stain blackening a quarter of a continent. Deimos's features could easily have been hewn from the metamorphic rock of Terra's ancient Himalayan mountain range, not far from where he'd been born 200 years ago. Some men laughed, and laughed often. Deimos was not one of them. His humour ran along bleaker lines. One of his subordinates, the 7th captain by rank, had once told him that his scarred face was a chronicle of wars no one wished to fight. Deimos smiled at the recollection. He was fond of Argel Tal's attempts at wit. Breaking from the momentary indulgence of reverie, Deimos regarded the oculus, still unsure exactly what he was bearing witness to. The rest of their ships spread out in loose attack formation, many of them still accelerating. The outriders and scouts were slowing significantly, their momentum dying as the rage of their engines faded.
"What am I watching?"
Deimos asked. His helm emitted the words as a crackling growl.
"Auspex report."
"Initial Auspex reports are filtering in now."
The officers of the three-faced scanner table were all human, their uniforms the same stark grey as the chapter master's armour. Their senior rating, the Master of Auspex, had gone pale.
I...
The chapter master turned his glare on the humans.
"Speak, and speak quickly," he said.
"The enemy fleet in geostationary orbit above Monarchia registers as Imperial, sir."
"So, it's true."
Deimos stared hard at the Master of Auspex, an aging officer with a strong voice who was frantically adjusting tuning dials on a display screen 3 meters square.
"Speak."
"They're Imperial, confirmed. They're not the enemy. A host of transponder codes are flooding the sensors actively broadcast. They're announcing themselves to the entire fleet."
The tension still didn't bleed from Deimos. Instead, it wormed deeper into his thoughts, dredging the memory of that maddening message to the fore. "Return to us," it had pleaded. "They call themselves the 13th Legion. Return to us. We beg you." Deimos let the disquiet sink back into the calmer sediment of his mind. He needed to focus. He watched the oculus as grey-hulled ships slowed, their wide-mouthed engines breathing diminished flares. Several vessels veered away from the rest of the fleet, breaking the elegance of the attack formation. Doubt, most definitely. No captain could know what to do. The perfect regimented anger of the assault run was crumbling, unsalvageable with so many vessels slowing and breaking away. All around them, the colossal fleet on the edge of open warfare collapsed, powering down their weapons. As an astral ballet, it was running through these final anticlimactic motions with clear reluctance. Again came the sense of the ship's captains infecting their vessels with emotion. The planet itself was close, close enough for the enemy fleet to edge into visual range. At this distance, they were little more than dark specks framed by dense cloud cover hanging in low orbit. Deimos turned to his brothers, his subordinates, each one of them standing on the lesser steps of his raised dais.
"Now we discover the truth in all this. Today we'll end in darkness."
This from the 7th captain, his left eye ringed by the serrated sun.
"We know the truth. We know what our brothers have done. No explanation will quench the Primarch's sorrow. No reasoning will quell his rage. You know this as well as I, Master."
Deimos nodded. He'd indulged a moment of concern that the Lex wouldn't slow down, that it would drive like a grey blade into the heart of the opposing fleet, its weapon batteries aflame as they sang their lethal songs. Brother against brother, Astartes against Astartes. Once he would have smiled at the delicious blasphemy of an impossible idea. Not now.
"We're being hailed,"
one of the Vox officers called from his console. At last, a fleet-wide message from the only voice that mattered. The message was relayed across the bridge, ruined by vox breakage, but recognizable nonetheless. My sons! No amount of distortion could conceal the hurt and affection in the words. My sons, we have reached Kur. The last prayer from Anarchia must now be answered. Today, we witness with our own eyes the ruin our brothers have made of the perfect city. The four Astartes warriors around the command throne shared a glance, though their expressions remained hidden behind their Mark III helms. Each of them heard the tremor in their father's voice. My sons, the message continued, blood demands blood. We will have the answers we seek before the day is done. This I swear to... The message didn't end. It was cut off. An overriding signal took hold of the Vox network, powerful enough to eclipse the words of the Legion's own Primarch. This voice was deeper, colder, and just as sincere. Warriors of the Word-Bearers, I am Gilliman of the 13th Legion, Lord of Macragge. You are ordered to descend to the surface immediately and muster in the heart of the raised site, once known as Monarchia. Coordinates are being conveyed. There will be no defiance of this mandate. Your legion, in its entirety, will gather as ordered. That is all. The voice ceased, and silence reigned. Almost 100 souls, human, Servitor, and Astartes, gathered on the bridge of De Profundis. None of them spoke a word for almost a full minute. Without even acknowledging the others, the 7th captain turned and stalked across the chamber, his armoured boots thudding on the plasteel decking.
Argyltal?
Dumos spoke into his helm's voxlink. His visor display tracked his subordinate captain, scrolling white text feeds of biorhythmic data across his vision. He blinked at a peripheral rune to clear the automatic tactical display. The 7th captain turned, making the sign of the Holy Aquila over his chest, his gauntlets forming the God Emperor's symbol over the polished breastplate.
I go to ready 7th Company for planetfall, he said. The answers we seek are on the surface of Kur, in the ruins of the perfect city. I want those answers, Dumos.
The air was gritty, thickened by dust and smoke haze. The ground was a black ash desert, with heat-seared patches of glass and melted marble that reflected the sunlight until they were crunched underfoot. Argyltal breathed in, tasting the recycled filtration of his own suit, the sweat, the chemical tang of his gene-enhanced blood. But he couldn't bring himself to seal his suit completely. Each breath drew in a penitent trace of the brimstone and scorched rock reek of the surrounding devastation. Nothing was left standing. Stone powder in the air, the result of a million pulverized marble buildings, was already coating their armor as the Word-Bearers stood in the heart of Monarchia. Oath parchments and prayer scrolls attached to Astartes' warplate turned a grey-white with settling dust. Argyltal watched his warriors standing amidst the ruination, some picking through debris with no real intent, others simply remaining motionless. And he searched for the words this moment required. Whatever those words were, they escaped him for now. The vox crackled live, and Zaphon's identifier rune flashed on the edge of Argyltal's red-tinted retinal display.
We stood here 6 decades ago.
Zaphon came to his captain's side, his rare gold-trimmed armor grayed by the falling dust. For once, the chaplain of the 7th Company resembled his brothers, rendering every warrior equal as they stood among Monarchia's bones.
Now the city is drowning in clouds of dust, but we stood in this very place. Do you recall it?
Zaphon asked. Argyltal stared out at the annihilated terrain, seeing ghosts in the mist, the spires and domes of buildings that no longer existed.
I remember, he said. This was the public plaza of Inaga Sector.
The captain gestured south, though every direction offered nothing but the same ravaged landscape.
There stood the Tophet Gate, where the preachers and traders gathered.
Zaphon nodded. His left eye bore the same mark as Argyltal's, the serrated star, symbol of a shared brotherhood. The weapon maglocked to his back, a ritual Crozius Arcanum, the war maul of Word-Bearer chaplains, was forged in the same shape. Its hammerhead was a spiked sphere of dark iron, threaded with silver. The conversation, such as it was, ebbed to nothing until the unwelcome serenity was broken by another company making planetfall. On howling thrusters, gunships made their final approaches, clawed landing feet crunching onto the fire-blasted ground. Usually, the flame and oil stench of their engine exhausts would assault the senses. Here, it was undetectable among the ruin already inflicted. Bulkheads and ramps clanged open. Another 100 warriors in the etched armor of the 17th Legion took their first steps into the dead city. What little formation existed broke almost immediately as the Astartes scattered, struggling to come to terms with what they were seeing. Argeltal blink-clicked a vox rune on his visor display, tuning into the general channel again. These new arrivals, wearing the heraldry of the 15th Company, voiced their breathless disbelief and impotent anger. Their chest plates were marked with a sigil of heaped human skulls, the chapter of the Osseous Throne. Argeltal offered a quiet greeting. The closest warriors saluted, respecting his rank despite his allegiance to another chapter. Body and blood, every one of them was a bearer of the word. That outweighed all else. Still more Thunderhawks streaked overhead, the gunships seeking clear ground to land. Between the warriors already on the surface and the gunships remaining where they'd landed, it was becoming a trial to deploy more of the Legion. East to west, north to south, the sky was a mess of shaking gunships and the heat shimmers of engines struggling to keep the Thunderhawks airborne. Every few minutes, the sky would fall dark, heralding the passage of a storm bird. These largest landers carried entire companies, their deafening passing temporarily blocking out the sun. Argeltal walked without purpose, crushing ruined rock underfoot. He sealed his armor's ventilation systems when he grew tired of inhaling the sulfuric stench of Monarchia's grave. Melted rock and scorched earth were never easy on the nose, and the captain's gene-enhanced olfactory senses were pained by the intensity. Breathing the recycled air of his suit's internal filters, he walked on. The ground was uneven, pounded into blackened craters by the Ultramarine's orbital assault. Argeltal felt his suit's stabilizer pistons and gravity gyros shifting to compensate. There were brief hums of power as the mechanics in his armor's knees and shins adjusted to new patches of uneven terrain. He knew Zaphon was following him even without looking at the digital distance tracker on his retinal display. It was no surprise when the chaplain spoke again.
"I feel as though we've lost the war without firing a single shot," the captain voxed. "But look to the skies, brother. Our father comes."
The sky grew dark once more, and Argeltal looked upward as the final stormbird flew overhead. Its hull was gold, reflecting the midday sun in a spray of solar glare. The captain's visor dimmed to compensate. With greater clarity came the revelation of shame. Smaller gunships, Thunderhawks with hulls of blue, flew in formation around the mighty golden stormbird. An escort squadron, watchmen, not honor guards. The Ultramarines were escorting the Wordbearer's Primarch down to the surface with all the undignified pageantry of a prisoner being led to execution. Argeltal's visor zoomed in, responding to his narrowed eyes. Static fuzzed for half a second, quickly clearing as his eye lenses refocused at the new range. Every turret on the Ultramarines' gunships was trained on the golden hull of the Wordbearer's Stormbird.
"Do you see that?" he voxed to Zaphon.
"An insult like that is hard to miss," the chaplain replied. "I'd believe it a lie had I not seen it myself."
Argeltal watched the lander's arc, taking it deeper into the city, and without any other signal, every Wordbearer nearby turned and walked in the direction set by the massive gunship.
"This has the stench of history in the making," Zaphon muttered. "Gird your soul, brother. Mind your humours."
The captain had never heard the layer of unease in Zaphon's voice before. It was not helping his own fragile calm.
"Answers,"
Argeltal replied, bringing up retinal readouts of bolter ammunition supplies, along with his armour's power pack temperature.
"Answers, Zaphon. That's all I want."
Argeltal and Zaphon led 7th Company into the heart of the city, marching to where the Legion gathered. 100,000 warriors stood in silence beneath the setting sun. 100,000 warriors, in perfect formation, bolters held in grey fists, helmed heads raised in pride. 100,000 pairs of red eye lenses stared ahead. Squad by squad, led by sergeants. Company by company, led by captains. Chapter by chapter, led by masters. Standard bearers stood before each company, banners held high, even as their details faded in the dust. Borne by Sergeant Malnor, the serrated Sun Chapter icon rose alongside the war banners of its three component companies, eclipsing them in both size and significance. A spiked circle of burnished bronze mirrored the symbol around every warrior's left eye, decorated with 68 bleached skulls hanging on black iron chains. The skulls were human and alien, each one the head of a fallen enemy champion worthy of remembrance. The left eye socket of every skull was ringed by the serrated sun symbol, painted with Astarte's blood, blessed by the company chaplains. Similar icons were held above the mustered legion. They rattled in the wind, trinkets chiming in grim melody, while the company war banners waved. Argeltal moved forward with the other commanders of the serrated sun, leaving their warriors in assembled columns. Although the chapter was far from the Primarch's favour, such honour belonged to the larger and more prestigious chapters made from 20 or more companies, their ranks still entitled them to stand at the forefront of the gathered legion. As he walked through ranks of statue-still word-bearers, Argeltal switched to the vox frequency secured by 7th Company prior to planetfall.
"Stand tall, brothers. Enlightenment will soon be ours."
A series of 10 vox clicks signalled the acknowledgement of every squad sergeant under his command. Several captains voxed quiet greetings as they assembled in an ordered line, their helms and shoulder guards marked with evidence of their own chapter allegiances. Before them all, the Golden Stormbird stood at bay, resting in the midst of 6 Ultramarines Thunderhawk gunships. The edges of their ceramite hulls were scorched bare in places from the fires of atmospheric descent. One captain broke ranks. He took a single step forward, and Argeltal felt the ground's minuscule tremor as the warrior moved. In hulking Terminator armor, the silver-wrought warplate still fresh from the forges of Mars, 1st Captain Cor Fearon stood apart from his brothers, as was his right. In the armor of the Legion's elite, he towered a meter above the lesser captains, clad in layers of reverently sculpted ceramite as thick as the hull skin of a battle tank. He carried no weapons beyond those his armor already offered. Oversized gauntlets ending in talons extending from each finger, the individual blades as long and curved as the primitive scythes used to harvest crops on backwater imperial worlds. Delicate circuitry threaded along the blades, veins of power that would invest the claws with crackling force upon the first captain's desire. Unlike the gathered captains, Cor Fearon wore no helm, and it was fair to say no poet or painter could ever portray the first captain as a handsome being without liberal artistic license. Argeltal watched Cor Fearon's finger blades ripple with electric current, a sure sign of impatience. The larger warrior's expression was locked in the sneer of a man who tastes nothing but bitterness and ash, which was the only face Argeltal had ever seen him wear. Despite the impressive armour, Cor Fearon's visage was corpse-gaunt and bone-pale, as it had been on each of the rare occasions the two captains crossed paths.
"I hate him," Zaphon whispered over the vox. "He wears that armour as a shield for 1,000 weaknesses. I hate him, brother."
Argeltal remained unmoving, bolter across his chest. He'd heard this from the chaplain many times before and could offer no answer to ease his friend's choler.
"I know," he said, hoping Zaphon would fall silent.
This was hardly the time for such things.
"He is not one of us. A false Astartes."
Zaphon fell into the familiar lament with teeth-clenching passion.
"He is impure. This is not the time for old grudges. Laxity like that is why you will never carry a Crozius," the chaplain said.
The nepotism behind Cor Fearon's ascension to the first captaincy was no secret. As the Primarch's spiritual counsel and foster father during the years of Lorgar's youth away from the Imperium, Corpheron had helped shape the growing demigod in ways his true father had not. They stood together through the years of sacrifice and revolution, through the holy wars that threatened to tear Colchis apart before its unity under the benevolent rule of Lorgar. When the God Emperor came to Colchis over a century before to offer Lorgar command of the 17th Legion, Corpheron had been far too old to receive the organ implantations and prepubescent genetic manipulations necessary to grow into one of the Astartes. Instead, through rejuvenate surgery, costly bionics, and limited gene forging, Corpheron was exalted above humanity as a sign of the value placed in him by the Primarch. Despite leaving humanity behind, he had not ascended to the ranks of true Astartes. Argeltal watched him now, this pinnacle of genetic compromise. Respect stilled his tongue, even if admiration did not. Corpheron spat onto the broken ground. The acidic gobbet of saliva hissed as it ate into the ruined stone. Only then did Argeltal reactivate the Vox channel to Zaphon by blink-clicking his brother's name rune.
Are you galled only by the First Captain's impurity? Or is it his complete lack of Legion discipline and that his victories eclipse yours and mine put together?
Zaphon chuckled, the sound low and dark. His Crozius hammer was in his fists, its mace head resting on the ground.
He is at the Primarch's side for each campaign. He commands the First Company, the Legion's finest, and wears the armor of a Terminator elite. It would take a fool to fail in those circumstances. I have heard him preach, brother, as have you. I do not like him, but I respect him. He speaks the word with an insight possessed by no other, and his wisdom pours fire into my blood. He orchestrated victory in a planet-wide civil war when he was merely a human priest. Do not underestimate him now.
Zaphon's voice was sterner.
Impurity cannot be forgiven. The Primarch chose him.
The captain's tone also grew stonier in response.
Does that mean nothing to you?
I do not doubt our father's judgment,
came the reluctant reply. Just when Argeltal sensed more to come, Zaphon fell silent, perhaps detecting an implied lecture in his brother's disapproval.
Stand ready,
Corpheron growled, his grinding voice at odds with his cadaverous face.
The Primarch comes.
As those words hung in the air, the ramp beneath the cockpit of the Golden Stormbird began to ease down on smooth gears. Argeltal breathed out, slow and tense, feeling his primary heart thud faster. Although he wasn't in battle, his secondary heart started a slower counterbeat to the hammering of his first. The figure descended the ramp alone, and the seventh captain felt the stinging threat of worshipful tears even as he kept his gaze on the ruined ground. He'd not seen his Primarch in almost 3 years. To be cast away from his radiance, even in the name of sacred duty, was to walk in shadow, devoid of inspiration. The Vox came alive with thousands of muted voices as countless word-bearers breathed their father's name. Many thanked fate for the chance to stand within his presence once again. Reverent chants ghosted over the communication channels, never rising above whispers. Argeltal was one of the few that remained silent at first, thanking fate in voiceless piety. 3 years. 3 long, long years of fighting in the darkness, praying for this moment to come. All doubt, all concern, all suspicion of the ultramarine summons was erased in a dual beat of his twin hearts. The figure stopped walking. Argeltal knew this from the succession of footsteps on blackened earth. Only then did he speak. A single word, a name used only rarely beyond the warrior sons who carried Lorgar's blood in their veins as they conquered an ignorant galaxy by Crozius and Bolter.
Aurelian,
the captain said, the word drowning in so many similar whispers. Argeltal raised his eyes at last to see the son of a living god standing in the heart of a necropolis.